Welcome to Ask and It Is Given. For almost 20 years, Esther and Jerry Hicks have brought forward the evolved consciousness collectively known as Abraham to audiences worldwide. These energies speak through Esther as they answer questions and offer teachings from their non-physical perspective. In the next hour, you'll hear Esther Hicks and Abraham explain many powerful laws of the universe and answer questions from audience members. Today's show was recorded in Silver Spring, Maryland in 2001.
Good morning. We are extremely pleased that you are here. It is good to come together for the purpose of co-creating. Do you agree?
Yes.
You are knowing what you are wanting?
Yes.
You are among the rare humans who are appreciating the contrast of your time and place. Your lips say yes.
Yes.
Do you think that your hesitation or even the humor that bubbled up in response to that question indicates just a little bit, maybe, that it's easier to offer a resounding yes, we appreciate the contrast of our time and place when there is not that much contrast? So that maybe what you really mean is, no, we don't like the contrast of our time and place, unless it is managed. In other words, if we can control the circumstance or the conditions of the contrast, then maybe, old wise one Abraham, we'll go along with you on your foolish question. But when there is true contrast, when there is something in my face that I really, really, really do not want, please don't ask me to appreciate the contrast of my time and place. And yet, we must ask you to appreciate the contrast of your time and place. Because even when contrast is exaggerated enough that it sets you off your balance, the alternative to contrast, which by the way could never be, would surely mean endedness. Because contrast is necessary for the eternalness. You understand that, don't you? It is out of the contrast that the new determinations or conclusions or desires are born. And without that new preference, decision, deciding, focusing within you, you leading edge creators out here on the leading edge of thought, then there would not be that birthing of desire, which is the summoning of source energy, which is the leading of all that is forward. Contrast produces the desire. The desire is the summoning thing. In other words, when you ask, it is given, and that's what that desire is. That's that vibrational asking that summons life force forward. Maybe it's because so many humans have seen non-physical or God or whatever it is you're wanting to call it as this concluded entity that somehow has achieved this ended perfection, as if that could happen anywhere in any universe, and that this now concluded perfection is now somehow waiting for you all to catch up. And when you do, then what? In other words, we've never really heard the end of that story as man has conjured it. When what is really happening is that source energy, whether you call it God or creative life force, it does not matter what title you give it. This source energy is eternally expanding, and you are extensions of that source energy out here on the leading edge of thought, pioneering the expansion. And so you said, I want to go forth into this time-space reality, and I want to acknowledge the variety, the differences of opinion, the differences of choice, the differences in belief. I applaud the difference. And from it, I will conclude my preference, and I will carve out for myself, through exposure to experience, preferences on a moment-to-moment basis, cellular preferences, even full conscious human preferences will be born from me. And with each desire that emanates from me, you said this from your non-physical stance, you're still saying it from your non-physical stance, as these preferences emanate from me, the asking will occur. And you knew how wonderful that was because you knew something else. You knew that when any asking occurs, that there is immediate answering from source energy. So, as source energy is responding to your requests, anything that you desire from any place that you stand is answered. And so you knew there was no risk, there was no danger. You knew that you would never get it done, and you knew that you could not get it wrong. You knew that as the contrast provided the clarity of decision within you, and the question was asked, whether it was on your lips or just emanating from you vibrationally, as the majority of them are, that source energy would immediately answer. And you said, I will go forth under those conditions, and I will take thought along with my other friends beyond that which it has ever been before. Now here you are asking, and source energy is answering, and some of you are saying, but Abraham, there must be something screwy with that, because I'm certain that I've asked for things that I have not received. And we say, well, now you're talking about the third part. The third part is, you must be a vibrational match to what you're asking for. Which means you cannot wallow in the contrast that has produced the desire and be a vibrational match to the desire at the same time, because step one and step three are very different steps. Can you hear what we are getting at here? In other words, let's say that you are moving through your experience and you notice that you do not have the abundance in terms of dollars that you want or need. Things are breaking down around you. You're needing to replace several things in your experience. As you look around your environment, you are inspired to desires that you cannot financially fulfill. And the more you move through your experience, the stronger that desire becomes. Emotions that move through you, you would describe as discouragement, some fear, maybe a little anger, daily frustration. And we say, natural emotions, when there's something that you really want that you're not focused upon, in other words, you're focused upon where you stand instead of where you want to be. So you say to your friends, I'm just so worried about money. And we say, in those natural responses to where you stand, you are hardly a vibrational match to what you're asking for. And unless you are a vibrational match to what you're asking for, the process of creation cannot be completed. It would be like turning on your radio because your friend tells you that there's something wonderful to hear on 98.6, and you say, my radio is stuck on 102. Make it come to me. And your friend would say, oh, it's just a minor adjustment on your dial, really. You can put it back on 102 later if you want to. Just move it over there for a little bit. And you say, no, I like it where it is. This is what I'm used to listening to. It's what my mother listened to. It's what her mother listened to. It's what everybody I know listens to. This is what we listen to. This is the thought that I choose to continue to think. This is my habit of thought, or this is my belief. And so I will stay right here. And your friend says, oh, but there is such a delicious thing if you would just adjust your dial just a little bit. And you say, I like it where I am. The receiving mode is a vibrational adjustment that you will come to recognize as you pay attention to the way you feel. When you feel the emotion that you would describe as passion or exhilaration or exuberance, or eagerness, or joy. Those high-flying, good-feeling emotions always mean that in this moment, there's a strong desire focused within you that you are in this moment a match to. When you feel strong negative emotion, like anger or fear, or strong depression, when you feel strong negative emotion, it always means that there is something very much wanted that is within your vibration, but that the thought that you're thinking right now, and therefore the vibrational countenance that has come in response to it, is a vibrational mismatch to your desire. Because step three is so significant to you, and we say that because step one just happens. In other words, you can't be a product of a contrasting environment without desire being born within you. It is born within you. You knew it. You set that up even before you came forth into this body. You pre-paved that long before the essence of you took form in this physical flesh, blood, and bone. Step two isn't your work anyway. That's source energy responding to your desire. So what we would really like to impress upon you in a way that you will always remember it is that your work is about step three. And it is so much about step three that we are calling our work about your step three. We are calling this gathering the art of allowing. It is the work that you are about, learning little by little to allow the things that you have already decided that you want. The most important thing that you will gather from this day, we're going to tell you right now, and maybe a few hundred more times as we're together. And that is that step one is step one. Step two is step two, and step three is step three. Let's recap. What we are saying to you is, you don't do step one and step three at the same time. In other words, your emphasis is upon step three. If you will let your emphasis be upon step three, everything else will take care of itself. And the reason that that is so important to understand is because when you are in the midst of the contrast that is producing a supersonic desire within you, that desire is like a rocket that shoots out of you in a flash, because the contrast that has produced it is different from the desire that shoots out of you in the flash. So then your work is to bring yourself, every chance you get, into vibrational harmony with your desire. And that's what the art of allowing is really about. It's about feeling yourself through your mood or attitude, and deliberately choosing thoughts and feeling them as you choose them until you feel your way into a good feeling place. We'll begin right here. Back row, if you'll stand, you'll be second. Right here, third. Come forward, if you will.
Good morning, Abraham. Can we prepare our next life now while we're still in this one?
You are, and you are doing it collectively and globally. We hear what you're getting at. We hear it from so many. Oh, Abraham, I came forth into this physical experience, and if I had a guidance system, I didn't know it, and I got separated from it pretty good, and I had a few years of not feeling so good, and out of that was born a desire to feel better, and then I discovered the science of deliberate creation or whatever, and now I'm feeling so much better than I've ever felt, and I really do not want to be born again and have to go through all of that again. And we say, and yet, you could not be at this place of receiving if you had not been at this place of desiring. And you could not be at this place of desiring if you were not at one time at that place of deciphering contrast. So when you say, how good it is now, but damn the process that got me here, we say, you're going to bless the process again and again and again. It is lifetime after lifetime going to bring you to these strong places of wanting. What you can do is teach your children about their well-being and encourage them to teach their children about well-being, so that as you continue to come forth into this physical experience, there are greater and greater platforms of well-being. Do not teach them to look at pockets of things going wrong and accept them as the basis of their life experience. They just don't need to be that, you see. Yes.
This brings me to another question, which is, In Buddhism, for example, they talk about choosing to come back or not. Is this possible? At some point, they said you can make the decision to remain in a non-physical.
Well, here is the thing that is a little confusing about that. It's hard for you in your physical form to see the non-physical as it really is. As you look around the room and you see very distinctive clumps of people. In fact, there's a chair provided for each clump. So then you begin to assume that there must be clumps of non-physical. So you pitch your little chairs in heaven with little clumps of beings sitting around or standing around or flying around. But you do picture clumps, don't you? You picture clumps of beings. And so then the question is, well, is the clump coming forth or is the clump not coming forth? And we say, the clump never came forth. It has always been a stream of consciousness that is focused in these individual personalities. And so sometimes people will say to us, Abraham, have you ever been physical? Or why aren't you physical now? Or here's the big one they often say to us, Abraham, if this physical life experience is so damn good, why aren't you here? Why aren't you here experiencing the contrast of this time and place? And we say, remember that source energy is always here. In other words, we are more here than you are here. In fact, what this whole gathering is about you getting so in alignment with that which we are that you then know that we are here. The only reason that you ever think that your inner being or that source energy or whatever you're wanting to call it isn't here is because you're focused so tenaciously on things that are so vibrationally different than that which we are that you've got your awareness of us pinched off. But even if your awareness of us is pinched off, we are still here. In other words, we could not be more here. You can't get here any more than source energy is here, you see. But when you say, well, I want the whole clump that is source energy to come here, we say, does the word source mean anything to you? That's like saying, I want all of the headwaters to come to the ocean. You see.
A friend of mine asked me to ask this. He's involved in a long, protracted lawsuit, and he has an uninterested lawyer and very limited funds. And he wants to know if it's possible for him to disengage from the process and still have things work out, especially there's some computer aspects to it that he's being told needs a specialist that's cost a lot of money to look into it. And it's just a very, you know, it's like dominating his life, and he wants to know if this can... Well, can he disengage completely and still have it within the legal process to have the whole thing work out?
Can he disengage and continue the lawsuit?
Well, can he continue the lawsuit but not give any more attention to it and get on with his life?
We'll answer the question a little differently than he asked it.
Okay.
Disengaging from the process is essential. Whether he moves forward with the lawsuit or not, disengaging from it is essential. Because as he is in this arena of pushing against, he cannot possibly allow what he is wanting. Mm-hmm. You see, a lawsuit is a perfect example of what we are talking about here, about the way humans address economics. Because what it is saying in the lawsuit is there is this clump that we are fighting over. And in order for one of us to win, the other one has to lose. And it is that mindset that has so many of you in the place of not allowing the abundance to flow to you. Not because you're trying necessarily to deprive someone else of something, although there is that struggle that is going on all along. But you have yourselves in a double bind because part of the time you think that there's only one prize that you're fighting over and you're afraid somebody else will be strong enough or bright enough that they will win the prize and leave you without. And the other part of the time, you're feeling guilty about yourself winning it and leaving them without it. Mm-hmm. Either way you go, you cannot win within that in terms of vibration. And so you have to disengage from that mindset by saying, there's enough for all of us and abundance will come can come to any of us who allow it. Mm-hmm. And what we see in every lawsuit that we've ever seen, and we've seen every one of them, far more is lost than is ever gained. Mm-hmm. Because it puts you right in that place of having to bang it out. Mm-hmm. And when you deprive yourself of your connection to source energy, oh, it takes a whole lot of action to even get by. Mm. See?
Yeah. So, just so I have a clear answer to tell him, should he disengage from this, or should he just let it go on but just not put his attention on it?
Well,
he tends to want to micromanage all the little processes that he...
It is not our job to ever tell anyone what to do.
Okay.
But we'll tell you what we would do. Mm-hmm. We would never involve ourselves in a lawsuit of any kind for any reason, mm-hmm. because there's nothing worthy of pushing against, because in every bit of pushing against, there is the personal deprivation of source energy.
Yeah.
And source energy is life itself. And then people say, well, I'm already committed. I've already got all this into it. Couldn't I just continue with it if I just don't think about it? And we say, well, that is, in fact, disengaging, isn't it? In other words, withdrawing your attention from it. But then you said he already has a disinterested lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So without his interest and without his lawyer's interest, we would not pursue it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Do you think your economy is more today than it was 100 years ago? How much more? Way more. How much more? Oh, no comparison. And where did it all come from? Human desire. What percentage of your population do you think has found a way to allow this extraordinary increase? 1%? And what do you think their magic is? They know they're in that 1%. In other words, they're in that place of expectation. What you begin to notice is that when the energy is moving faster, in other words, what is the energy? Source energy. What does that mean? It is the source of all things manifest. So when more source energy is present, then the ability to manifest is more. Would you agree to that? So as there is more source energy present, there is more energy that is flowing through. Those who are allowing it are thriving in ways beyond former expectation. And those that are not are really not. In other words, the crevasse between those who have and those who have not becomes a much more distinct one. The crevasse between those who allow wellness and those who do not becomes much more distinct. In other words, what's happened is it's like a giant magnifying glass has been laid over, and wherever your thoughts are, it is becoming more. So your struggles are more, but your ease is more. But your love is more, but your pain is more. In other words, everything that you're living is amplified in this time of faster moving energy. And so we would say that if any of you have the mindset that you're wanting to get ahead financially, there has never in all of the universe been a more logical time for it to happen than right now. But you've got to chill out.
Yes.
Hello. My question is about that moment in time when we reach for a higher thought. I've been thinking a
what
lot.
What is a higher thought?
Well, when you say reaching for a better thought.
What is a better thought?
A thought that makes you feel better.
Just wanted to make sure that you know what you're reaching for.
Okay. I've been thinking a lot about that. And I've listened to your teachings for a while now, and you say there's no assertion. And maybe it's my understanding of assertion. And in that moment, it seems it's a very important time for us. And the decision that we make then seems to be an act of will to actually reach for something that's higher. And I think we have a misunderstanding about what actually willpower is. I actually came to the realization that I think willpower is really allowing, and that it's not some sort of assertion.
Willpower is choosing. Willpower is choosing a place of allowing. It's choosing a thought that allows.
Okay.
So you could say willpower is guiding thought.
Right.
Or choosing thought.
Okay.
Stay with us for more of Ask and It Is Given, a live lecture brought through Esther Hicks from the evolved consciousness collectively known as Abraham. To learn more about Esther Hicks and Abraham, visit hayhouse.com.
Are you an archive member? Our free archives area means you can listen to almost 2,000 hours of past programming from Dr. Wayne Dyer, Doreen Virtue, Debbie Ford, Summer McStravick, and your other favorite shows. You can either download the audio file to your desktop so you can burn it to a CD, or you can listen to a streaming MP3 where there's no downloading involved. Choose the best option based on your internet connection speed and operating system. So take advantage of this terrific resource today at hayhouseradio.com.
Join Hay House Publishers and Barbell Moore, the creator of Cosmic Ordering, for an incredible one-day workshop, Saturday, June 30th at the Camden Centre Town Hall in London. During this amazing interactive workshop, Barbell will help you tune into the universe and order those things that you truly desire. Tickets are available now by calling 020-8962-1230 or visit hayhouse.co.uk for more information.
Will I ever find someone I can actually trust to spend my life with?
I know. Isn't that just the toughest thing? But you do find a guy by the name, I think his name is Steve or Steven, around November.
There's no one like Sylvia Brown.
We can talk about everything and anything you want to talk about.
Tune in for Ask Sylvia every Thursday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on HayHouseRadio.com.
You've seen them on Oprah, now see them live. Join heart surgeon Dr. Mehmet Oz, medical internist Dr. Michael Roizen, and a panel of experts at a powerful new all-day workshop. It's all about you. Be the world expert on your body. You'll learn powerful insights on what makes your body tick, how to lose weight naturally, and more. Five-city tour starts July 7th. Visit HayHouseEvents.com for details.
Your favorite psychics, mediums, and intuitives are hosting a cruise to the Eastern Caribbean, and they want you to come along. Spend 7 nights on the Intuitive Connections cruise this November, where you'll meet psychic Sony Choquette, medium Gordon Smith, intuitive Colette Baron-Reed, and psychic medium John Holland. Hear messages from your deceased loved ones, contact your celestial helpers, and get readings about your future. Space is limited. Call 888-259-9191 or visit hayhouse.com.
HayHouseRadio.com inspirational moment is excerpted from the audio CD Awakening the Power of a Modern God by Greg Braden, available at HayHouse.com.
Are we aware of what we convey to our world through our actions and our beliefs in each day? If life is a language, what is our world saying back to us? What is your world saying to you? What are your successes, your perceived failures, the joys, and the frustration saying to you about your deepest beliefs of yourself? In the world that so many feel is changing so very, very fast, the events of life, personally and collectively, may now be seen as a gauge of sorts, a feedback mechanism that invites us to recognize the message we're sending to ourselves. To participate in this conversation, however, we've got to understand the language.
We hope you've enjoyed this HayHouseRadio.com inspirational moment.
We now return to Ask and It Is Given, a live lecture from Esther Hicks as she channels a group of evolved beings collectively known as Abraham.
When I first started doing this work, I think work's the wrong word, but when I first started allowing these experiences, I noticed that initially doing that sort of choosing seemed to be hard. And I wondered what that was about.
As you've been moving through your life, you've developed habits of thought, and they have vibrational frequencies. And as you choose them, you have a feeling response to them that is your emotional guidance system, but you've come to refer to that as your mood or attitude. So your mood or attitude is your indicator of the balance of thoughts that you usually run through in a day. So when you're focused upon something, your thought is offering a vibration that really only gives you, by law of attraction, access to other thoughts that are vibrationally quite near it. So your range of vibration is not the gamut all the way from truly disconnected to connected. It's rather a narrow range. So if you're in a sort of unpleasant mood, your range of vibration goes from feeling really frightened to feeling pretty rotten. In other words, that's not a very big range, but it doesn't go from agony to ecstasy. It's like the range on your radio dial or on your CB radio. It's the range that is the range.
Right.
And so as you stand here in this place where you're really focusing upon something in this moment that causes you to really feel strong negative emotion, and you say, oh, my guidance system is working, I'm feeling negative emotion, even in that awareness you have diffused the vibration a little bit.
Absolutely.
And as you go further by saying, and I really don't choose to feel this way, it seems that I do feel this way, but I would like to choose a different thought, you've diffused the vibration a little bit more, but you still don't have access to that bright, happy, fluffy thought way over there. In other words, you've changed your range a little bit by your decision to feel better, but you don't have access to all of those thoughts. So as you say, well, I'm going to reach for a better feeling thought, and your desire is to really find a blissful thought, the most pleasant thing that you've ever thought, it's unlikely that you're going to come across it very easily, even if you've been carrying it around in your pocket for a while. In other words, Esther began making mental notes and eventually written notes. We encouraged her to write a notebook full of extraordinary experiences. She had pages of experiences where she remembered feeling exaltation in the middle of them. And she thought, well, she would use those as her touchstone in order to feel better in times when she did not feel so good. But the funny thing about that is, you can't even remember those times when you're in the middle of something else, not because you're bad, but because vibrationally you don't have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we say, as you just reach for the best feeling thought you can find, and hold it for as little as 17 seconds, then that better feeling thought becomes your mid-range thought, and then the horrible thought goes out of range and a little bit better feeling thought comes into range. And as you reach for that thought and hold it, and that thought and hold it, and that thought and hold it, before you know it, really within an hour or two, you can be in a whole different vibration.
I understand that, but what I'm trying to get at is, what is that power that decides to reach for the feeling thought? What is that?
Focus. It's the selfish desire, and we mean selfish in the most
angelic
of words.
But that seems to be like some sort of assertion, though.
It is your selfish desire to feel good.
Okay.
It's your guidance system surfacing. It's contrast working for you, because whenever you know what you don't want, you know more clearly what you do want. So when you're confused, you want clarity. When you're sick, you want wellness. When there isn't enough of something, you want more of it. In other words, it's this balance of the universe that causes the preference to be focused within you.
But that, to me, seems to be the critical aspect of your teachings, is that in that moment you have that choice. I mean, it seems so critical to me.
Give us more.
Well, like that gentleman just now, he talked about he was living in his basement and then he came and listened to you and he suddenly changed something.
But the thing that we want you to understand is that within all of your vibrations, there are a bunch of things happening. You're believing some stuff and you're desiring some stuff, and all of that stuff is called thought, and all of that thought is part of the mix. Mm-hmm. So all of you have this vibration that is happening that is desiring belief, desiring belief, and desiring belief. So as he was struggling within his life experience, he was shooting out rockets of desire. That's why we call them rockets. They're brief insights that say, I want something different than I'm now living.
Right.
But they are so brief because your usual vibration is in a different place. But once you launch the rocket, the asking has taken place and the source energy begins to answer. So what happened to him as he came to the gathering and as he sat here for hours like you are all doing today is that little by little we sort of soothed him into his connection. He became more connected, more believing in his own well-being,
right,
more trusting in well-being, more accepting the perfection of who he was, just for a little bit. And it was enough to make the difference that he allowed just a little more. And he was wise enough that he made the connection between what he wanted, how he felt, how he now felt, and what he allowed. And that's what we're talking about more today than anything.
Mm-hmm.
As we give endless stories about Jerry and Esther and the way life unfolds for them, the reason that we are offering the majority of the stories is because we want you to realize that it is in their recognizing of what is happening that the true allowing takes place. If you want something and you've forgotten that you've been asking for it, it's been so long since you articulated it, you've sort of given up on it, and then the universe begins to say, come this way, come this way, come this way. And even though sometimes you are following your bliss and going that way, you don't know why you're going that way. You're missing all of the delicious signposts along the way that are evidence of the success that is coming to you. But when you have just that morning talked about what you want and why you want it, and then the universe says, come this way, and you get the impulse and you follow it and you receive a little breakthrough, you can feel, I'm onto something. I'm sniffing it out. I can feel it happening. And that's when deliberate creation really becomes satisfying.
Right.
That's the way you intended for it to be.
So many, like, you know, teachers, when they talk about this, you know, other teachers, they talk about, like, this moment when suddenly everything dropped. I remember you talking about Jerry. He just said, okay, I'm letting go. And it seems to me that is the crux of being human. It's just like this allowing. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like everyone that ever had a peak experience or just, it was all about just opening up to that moment that was already there anyway.
So sometimes, out of exhaustion, you just torture yourself into allowing. That's one way to go.
That's certainly one way. It wouldn't be the way I choose.
Sometimes through stimulation of someone who is so connected, and right, you're sort of trapped in your chair, right, and it's embarrassing to get up and leave. Right. And so you just sit and you listen to the rampage that goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. Sometimes you can find a greater place of allowing.
Right.
Most of you have to die to get it. In other words, we didn't want to upset you. When you make that transition, when you release that consciousness, you always reemerge back into that pure, powerful energy. But what we are all talking about and what you are talking about is, how do I vibrate in a way that allows it here? And we say, you just got to practice. But the motivation that must be there before you're even willing to do the practice is, you have to be selfishly oriented. You have to be so selfishly oriented that you really want to feel good. Have you ever been with someone and as you start a conversation, you can just see by the look on their face that they don't want to go there. They're hoping you don't go there. Sometimes they're bold enough to say, please don't go there. Those are powerful teachers, because what they're saying to you is, I've been there before, I didn't like it when I was there, let's not activate this and ruin this moment. So if we were standing in your physical shoes, that's the way we would approach this. We would begin to discover that just like there's food that pleases me and food that doesn't, and there's water temperature that pleases me and water temperature that doesn't, there are thoughts that please me more and thoughts that please me less. But it is not until you realize that you have control within this environment that you are willing to be the chooser. And that's why, as we began expressing through Esther, we called this the science of deliberate creation, because we wanted you to begin to recognize that you have the power to choose. And then later, as we watched you working so hard in your choices, we began saying, well, don't choose quite so hard and just chill out and relax a little bit. And now you're helping us to integrate the two all over again, aren't you? Creation is about focusing. And so why would you come into these bodies to begin with? In other words, source energy is in a very blissful place. Source energy is that heavenly place that you're all going to eventually croak and reemerge back to. So what's the point of physical experience?
If
it's perfect in the non-physical, you come forth in the physical and you suffer for a while and you create some stuff and then you reemerge back into the perfect place. In other words, what's the point? Why not just stay in non-physical where there's no resistance, where it feels perfect all the time? And we say the reason that you come forth is because there is so much excitement and so much stimulation in getting to mold the energy. Have you ever sat? Try it sometime. It will teach you everything you need to know about creation. Get some really bright, gooey, colorful clay, lots of different colors, and put them in clumps on a table and invite 4 or 5 or 10 children in, and then have them all sit over there while you play with the clay. And say to them, I don't want you to play, I want you to watch me play. I am the creator of this stuff. You just sit over there. And they will be antsy, they would gather together in force and tie you up if they could. Because they are wanting so much they cannot wait to get their hands in the clay. And that's the way you felt as you came forth into these physical experiences. You didn't say, oh, I'll go forth into a perfect environment. You said, I like this contrast. It's going to cause me to focus. And you understood that the way you create is through the focusing, through the choosing. So it's through the choosing and feeling and choosing and feeling and choosing and feeling and choosing and feeling and choosing and feeling. And as we watch Esther, we will see her choose a thought, sometimes not because it's the best feeling thought, but she will choose a thought because it's the most stimulating thought, or the most interesting thought, or the most compelling thought, because it's out there, it's been being shown, and somebody else has ratcheted up. It's a big, juicy thought. It's not boring in any way. It's a fantastically big, juicy thought. So she will join the thought. Because she is mixed up in her criteria, she's looking for truthful or interesting or expansive and forgetting the only thing that really matters, how does it feel? And so sometimes she'll be right in the middle of it with both feet and both hands, sort of chewing it up, enjoying how fast her mind is, enjoying the thoughts that come, enjoying the conclusions that come. And sometimes she, like you, will be pretty deep into the thought before she realizes, ooh, this thought does not feel very good. While it has been stimulating and interesting, I am not allowing life force to flow. I have chosen a thought that is so apart from the source that is really me that I'm withering away from my source. And then if she's withered too far, it's hard to find the thought that feels better. So that's the key, to be so aware of the way you feel that you are choosing your thoughts with one criteria and one criteria only. How does it feel? Because every thought has the potential of being that juicy, big, satisfying thought. Because law of attraction says everything that you focus upon must become more. So that's why all genius is attention to a subject. That's all it is. Law of attraction makes the genius. It is you holding the focus that law of attraction works upon, you see. So, is creating about choosing? Yes, it is. Is creating about thinking? Yes, it is. Is creating about thinking and feeling and thinking and feeling and thinking and feeling and thinking and feeling? Oh, that's the way we'd create. And so, if we choose a little thought and we can't tell how it feels, it's so little. It's a puny little thought. And it's not about anything I've ever thought about before, so I don't have an opinion one way or another. So I'm thinking about that thought, and I don't have no knee-jerk response, no gut feeling, nothing. It's just a thought. But I'll talk about it anyway because it's polite. And the people that I'm having dinner with want to talk about it, so we'll talk about it further. We'll talk about it further. We'll talk about it further. Before you know, it starts to pick up momentum. And then other people bring more into it, and other people bring more into it. Now I'm beginning to have a feeling response. I'm interested. I'm excited. I'm uplifted, or I'm not liking it, I'm discouraged. You can tell whether you are troubled by the thought as it amasses more energy, or whether it is life-giving. And that's why we say, as you begin to say, how does this thought feel? That's why the music called you. The music called you initially because it felt so very good. It was the tool through which you connected to source energy first, but not only first, but most. In other words, because it was the subject that you gave more attention to longer, you held yourself in a place of connection longer than any other subject, or maybe all other subjects put together in your life. And then when the music becomes a business, in other words, when the music becomes more than just the music, and there are those other things to focus upon, then some of those don't feel so good. In other words, in retrospect, you can see how it gave you life and how it took life from you. Yes.
But for me as well, the music, like you said, the deliciousness, I think, of being human is that the creation, the molding. It's definitely a truth. I mean, I feel that. I want to leave because I want to give time for other people, but I just wanted to say something to I think it was like the first gentleman or the second gentleman who was talking about finding dimes and quarters, and I wanted your input on this. When I lived in Florida, and I think that's perfect, there was this gentleman that walked along the street and he found a brown bag and there was like $2 million in the bag, and he said, oh yeah, I find dimes and quarters, but I never found millions of dollars. And I'm thinking to myself, that's what you were saying about the button and the castle. I think there's millions of dollars lying around as well.
There are.
Right?
Yes. But if he found it, he'd give it back. Or at least he did the $10. Oh, it's lying around in so many places.
Right, right, right.
And when you get happy, it just shows itself to you everywhere you go.
Right, right.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. bring us back around to where we are.
You were just going to say, how could I actually create feeling safe, like keeping well-being in my presence and not let thoughts of disasters sneak in and grab hold?
Don't you think it's a rather good thing that when you think a thought that isn't a vibrational match to what you want, that you have a feeling response that lets you know that? As you come across a thought that has very strong negative emotion, what that's telling you is you have a very strong desire relative to this and a very strong belief that is contradicting it. It doesn't mean you're on the brink of disaster. It means this really matters to you. Remember that you live in this time-space reality where there is a buffer of time. So none of you need fear that the next thought will be your last, in the sense that if I have a really strong fearful thought, that that means I must be on the brink of something really awful happening. What it means is I am focused in opposition to something that really, really matters to me. Would you touch a hot stove and complain, "Oh, my hands are just too sensitive"? Or would you appreciate the sensation that makes you want to withdraw from something that is not beneficial? And so it is the same sort of thing. We would just stop and say, "Ah, my guidance system is reminding me that I'm not wanting to go down this path and use this as my excuse." Many of you, because you're having strong thoughts about it and strong feelings about it, it is a little worrisome to you because it feels like you're having more negative emotion or stronger negative emotion than you have been. And the thing that we're wanting you to remember is that just means that it's about a topic that matters more to you. And so as you stop and say, "Oh, this really matters," and then choose another thought, then you'll be right back on track quickly. We watched Esther feel that strong, 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 strong knot in her stomach that had no physical basis, but she asked for it. In other words, she said, "I want to really feel my guidance," and she took the subject that matters very much to her, which was the well-being of all of the people on the planet, and she focused upon their utter destruction. Is it any wonder that she would have a strong negative response? And does it mean that it's going to happen? No. All it means is this thought in this moment is detrimental to your now experience. That's all it means.
So with all the media and everything that's going on right now, a lot of times I can keep a balance in just hearing what's going on and not getting caught up in the emotion of it.
Think about what the media believes. They believe that you believe that in order to live a good life, you have to watch out for all of the things that go wrong. Okay. So they've taken it upon themselves to point out to you the things that go wrong. But think about the extraordinary disproportion. If your media would take into account all of the experiences that were had today, all of them, how many people saw a beautiful sunrise, and how many people had a glorious breakfast, and how many people's hearts beat in their chest just right today, and how many people metabolized their food just right today, and how many children went to school, and how many mothers loved their children. And in other words, we could not begin, if you had 10 million years and nothing more to do than listen to us, we couldn't even begin to highlight the well-being that abounds. And so if your media had the ability to take all of the well-being and put it into proportion with the not well-being, and they were to give you a broadcast that equally and fairly reflected their findings, do you know how long the information relative to the anthrax or the towers would, it would be across the screen. You'd say, "Oh, what was that static? A little static on my screen. What was that? Oh, there must be bad stuff happening somewhere."
Okay, good. Right.
But instead, they go looking for it. They make it their life's work to go all around the planet and find what might trouble you if you see it. And then they magnify it and bring it to you and show it to you and give you a distorted view of what's happening.
Right.
And the thing that we're really wanting you to hear, it's what you're asking for, and we can really give it to you clearly, is that because we understand the nature of what you're asking for globally, And because we understand who you are and what is truly in your hearts, and because we understand the universe's ability to answer it, we say to you, without any fluctuation or rippling whatsoever, well-being is so predominant for you to spend a moment worrying about anything is really silly. And you say, but I've seen evidence of not well-being. And we say, get it into proportion. Mm-hmm. And you say, I can't get it into proportion. I've got a television. I cannot possibly get it into proportion. It's been so amplified out of proportion. And we say, it doesn't matter. Even with all of that amplification of all of that that is out of proportion, still well-being abounds. It is not possible for a group of people, whether it is one or 18 or hundreds or thousands, it is not possible for a bunch of them to band together and focus upon your destruction and be able to achieve it when the well-being of the planet is so extraordinarily balanced the other way. It is not possible. Is it possible for them to make ripples? Yes. Is it possible for you to think about it? Yes. Is it possible for you to talk about it with one another? Yes. Is it possible that it may diminish the well-being that is coming into your experience to some degree? Yes, you're doing that all of the time anyway. That's what we meant earlier when we said you've not got more resistance. It's just about different things. So if we were standing in your physical shoes, we would work to bring ourselves into balance. In other words, if they say 100 letters went out and had anthrax in them, we would sit down and mathematically, we'd call the post office and we would say, how many letters actually went out today? Well, just in the city of New York, 20 million letters went out today? 20 million, does anyone have a calculator? What is the percentage? One letter in relationship to 20 million, what is the proportion of well-being and not well-being? You get a sense of what we are talking about. There are so many things that you could give your attention to that would cause you to experience a diminishment of life force, and none of it is worthy of your attention, not any of it. And so at the heart of all struggle and all discomfort is the belief that I have to get rid of unwanted things in order to live in a place of well-being. I have to remove the things that I do not want, and if I am able to push hard enough against them, I will obliterate them, and then in their absence, I will have well-being. As our friend so powerfully pointed out earlier, you have well-being. You have well-being. Well-being is the order of your day. And as soon as you get on with that, you will live that personal well-being. And it has always been thus. And there is no exception to it anywhere. In other words, you can't find a pocket of anyone anywhere that is living differently than that. You might find some that have been hammering longer on what they do not want, so they have managed to hold themselves for longer apart from it. But there is no one that could not tomorrow or even today step into a place of better mood and better attitude and immediately open their reservoirs of well-being and immediately begin to experience it, without exception.
To learn more about Abraham, visit HayHouse.com to find the books, The Law of Attraction, and Ask and It Is Given by Jerry and Esther Hicks. You may also visit their website at abraham-hicks.com. Join us again next time for another hour of Ask and It Is Given.